You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
We turn our attention right now to our COVID catch-up, and joining us again is Dr. John Kirk, who is a physician in the Adventist healthcare system. Dr. Kirk, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Taylor. Good morning, Barry. It's great to be back, finally.
Been a while.
Yeah, I had a birthday. I had to take a break.
Hey, happy belated.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I have an answer for you, Taylor. All we have to do is be patient and wait for the earthquake.
Yeah. Great.
It'll just all fall in there.
Can't wait.
We'll have a new island or a new country.
Yeah, seriously. Well, if you know me, earthquakes are one of my two greatest fears. So really can't wait for that to happen.
That is shared by a lot of us out here, I suspect.
Yes, yes.
So turning to our COVID catch-up news, vaccines are where we are all focused now. We've talked enough about masks. We've talked enough about wiping things down. We've talked enough about travel restrictions and whatnot. So everybody's interested in the vaccines, where we're going to get to, how quickly we can get there. We were just talking with Dr. Relucio about this bottleneck of the actual product getting to the people who need it to administer it. So where do we begin on a conversation around the vaccines right now?
Let's talk about why. You know, let's get really serious about this. I want to just bring up a really simple analysis or comparison. Vaccines save lives. No matter who you are, even if you're an anti-vaxxer, it's almost impossible, other than denying that the data is in fact legitimate, it's almost impossible not to believe that vaccines save lives, and the COVID-19 vaccine is going to be no different. Let's just put it out there. There's 8 COVID vaccines right now. I know we only have 2 here in America, the 2 mRNA vaccines that we have for distribution, Moderna and Pfizer, but there are 6 more somewhere around the world that are now approved for at least emergency use. And people are getting vaccinated at incredible rates. There's not a lot of bad things happening. Sure, there's a story here, you know, a story there. We get all up in arms when anything happens that's negative, and it's making news. We've talked about, you know, negative news makes sense, but to get posted, but the positive news not so much. But let's look at the concept of the vaccine for the COVID-19. If a million people get COVID-19, and we look at the ratios that are predicted in terms of death rates, as well as the current death rates in the world and simple death rates in the world and in America, we're going to have somewhere between 6,000 and 15,000 people die. 150,000 people die. That's a ton. I apologize. It is 6,000 to 15,000 people die. A lot of people. Once I can get my math done. If I look at how many people are going to die or really experience a severe reaction to the COVID-19 vaccine, based on what we have now, we have more than 100 million vaccine doses distributed around the world. 1 to 2 people will die. There's no zeros. I don't have to be very confused. So we're talking 6,000 to 1 or 15,000 to 1 potentially in terms of deaths. And are there any really serious outcomes that are negative? Sure, but there are far more serious outcomes that are negative with COVID. It doesn't make sense not to think about getting the vaccine. Sure, there are people who are allergic, et cetera. But I think that's the most important process. Don't be afraid of the vaccine. Good news about that.
It's good to hear. Why is it that some, like you say, with 6 other vaccines out there, why are they taking so long? What's the difference? And I did hear about one of those 6 that now is sort of like failing enough that they're dropping the trial, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure if within those 6, there may be another one. I can't tell you for sure. I just don't have that information. That said, all around the world, there are different levels of support. Ours seem to be very successful, albeit novel, and so maybe a little more fearful we are as a populace. But they're ranging anywhere from 70% to 95% success or efficacy rate in preventing the infection. The challenge is that we don't have contracts with many of the other entities that are producing these. We have specifically not looked at, for example, AstraZeneca's product. So we're just not going to get many of these. We have the potential to get and make more. It's not so difficult to get adequate volumes, particularly with this mRNA. It's so easy to make. I mean, it's easy for me to say. Technically, it's very challenging. But they can literally make millions of doses within an incredibly small volume. Less than a barrel of wine would create far more than a million doses of this vaccine. It's just the process has to be so extremely controlled so that no abnormalities come into it or contaminants. That all said, there's a number of challenges that people think about. One of them is, well, God, I'm going to get sick. I'm going to get the disease. Well, we know that's not true, right? This vaccine, the ones that we have access to here, they work differently. They don't have the opportunity to make you sick from the point of view of getting the disease. We are not giving any of the product that will allow you to get COVID-19. We're giving you something that translates into a product, remember the spike protein, that gets translated by our own cellular mechanism, fooling us essentially into thinking that we had the disease. That mRNA that we've given you as a shot, it's gone within 4 days. It's out of your system within 4 days. It doesn't get into the nucleuses where the genetic material is of our cells. And even if it did, it couldn't change our DNA, which is the only thing that would make a difference for us. There's really very little to be worried about in the big picture of things. And so one of the stats that I came across, which was kind of interesting, is, you know, how time and experience can change our opinions of things, right? Before October, or in October, I think by October 12th, Gallup did a poll. They said about 50% of us were willing to take the vaccine at that point. This was before the vaccine was released, but very close to it, both of them being approved. Now it's close to 65%. You know, a lot of things have changed. There's some more of a positive mental attitude, I think, out there. You guys were talking a little bit about that earlier. But at the end of the day, I think that's a good thing because it's the minimum of what we need, right, for herd mentality, or herd immunity, I should say, mentality too.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk some about the variants now, because we're hearing different strains of this story, as it were, that come along with the strains of the virus. The first was there was a new variant in the UK, and everybody was focused on that maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And then we started to hear, well, the UK variant is now appearing in the US, and we hear about South Africa. And then the other day, there was a story about how the Bay Area is kind of developing its own variant, it seemed like. What kind of light can you shed on all of that, and how much concern should people have in regard to the disease possibly getting worse as it mutates?
Yeah, so far, we don't think the disease is getting worse. There are some theorists in Britain, for example, that have been suggesting that, you know, it will get worse. You know, the ones that we know about, you know, you just mentioned South Africa, Britain, there's a Brazilian. There's at least 13, the last time I looked, that had been, quote, identified as different strains, none of which were significantly different enough that any of the experts thought that our vaccines would not benefit us just like they will now, even if we didn't have the mutations. It's the natural order of vaccines, and for humans as well, for us to evolve, to change. They just tend to do it faster because they're multiplying faster and they're much simpler than we are. And they're just looking at what creates, they being the viral entity, essentially is looking at what allows it to propagate, and it tries to seek ways to get that to happen. So the longer it takes us to vaccinate people, it's more likely that some variant, something we haven't yet seen, will come up and start to elude our tests, the treatments, and the vaccines that we have, or few treatments and the vaccines that we have. So it's like everything becoming more genetically diverse, and it's going to continue. That's the nature of all viruses. So if the faster we can get our vaccines in our arms, the better off we will be in terms of limiting anything that happens with a mutation. It's not to say that sometime in the future we won't come up with a mutation that does evade these things. That's certainly a possibility, and that's kind of what happens essentially every year with the flu, right? But it's a different structure and much more likely to happen with the flu, significantly different than it is with this particular structure, since it's a single entity without the potential for crossing over to another subtype, complete subtype like the flu can do.
Yeah. I just found an article. It was Merck. Merck and Company on Monday said it will end development of its two COVID-19 vaccines and will focus pandemic research on treatments with initial efficacy. I can't say that word ever. Data
Did
on
it. Short that stock?
They're looking for an experimental oral antiviral expected by the end of March. So there you go. It said they had inferior immune responses.
Yeah. So that one kind of falls out of the running, and that
I've never even heard of that one.
Yeah, the ones that
they
have,
were a late starter.
I think we've all been focused on the ones
Pfizer,
that got
Moderna, AstraZeneca.
The emergency approval, right? And so we zoomed in on those and kind of left the others in the background.
And I don't think that Merck one was part of the eight worldwide that have been approved, because it never did receive emergency use authorization. It hadn't finished its testing.
Interesting. Mm. So have you had the vaccination yourself?
I've had both of the vaccines. It's probably a good story we can talk through. When I say both of the vaccines, both my vaccinations, and I had the Pfizer vaccine. At the time we started up at St. Helena Hospital, we didn't have access to the Moderna. I don't know that there's a major difference between the two. There's pros and cons with both. I must say I'm happy that I have it. I don't feel like I'm changing any of my behaviors, and I think that's important to talk a little bit about in a bit, in the sense of masks and watching my distance and washing my hands. But I believe, I feel more comfortable that I'm not going to likely get somebody sick, and I'm not likely to get sick. All that said, there's caveats all around this. Let's start with how I felt when I got it. So the first time I got it, barely any reaction, really. Maybe a minimal soreness, but hardly anything I would even think about. However, 5 days later, normally these side effects happen within 1 to 3 days. 5 days later, I had a fever to 101.3. I was in bed thinking I had COVID. I was shivering and sweating, and my muscles ached. But when you look at all the side effects of the vaccine, that's exactly what a moderate reaction is to the vaccine. It's a good sign that my body is converting and doing work. So in a sense, when I found out I was COVID negative, that was some positive feeling. The second time we get the vaccinations, it's supposed to be a worse side effect. I had a little more soreness at the site, and I chose the same arm. But I had no other symptoms at all, and I golfed for 5 days in a row, which maybe helped me clear out whatever I might have otherwise got. But it was a good time.
Interesting. Would you say that your reaction was typical from others you've talked to?
I think mine was greater than a lot of people the first time around. The fact that it wasn't worse the second time was a little bit different than some.
I've heard people say the second one caused them to be sore.
Exactly. It was definitely sore. There's no question about that. But I didn't have any of those other symptoms. At the end of the day, I'm hoping they didn't give me the placebo, but realistically, there wasn't any placebo. So I feel like there's nothing about that. And I had a pretty moderate response, nothing about it that I wouldn't do again in order to, achieve personal protection, but also protection for others, because that's really what it's about. You're not just getting this vaccine for yourself. You're getting it for other people. Once we get a vaccine, willingness, like we're saying, about 65%, and we get vaccinated to that level along with those who have already been infected. And of course, those who have been infected should also get the vaccination. But caveat here, not within 2 weeks, roughly speaking, and not within 2 weeks of any other vaccination. So if you're going to get the flu vaccine, but you have an opportunity to get the COVID first, then add the flu next. That would be my advice. But if you know you're going to get the more than 2 weeks, get the flu as soon as you can get it. And then when the COVID comes your way, get that as well. The side effects it's called reactogenicity. I love that word. So reactogenicity, this particular vaccine is more like our shingles or the chickenpox vaccine, if you will, where when you get that, if those of us who are 50 years plus, it can hurt quite a bit. A lot of people do have that reaction of a fever or some muscle aches, and it's frustrating. Who wants that? Plus, it's a two-course dose as well, and so a lot of people don't want to come back, for the second. Please come back and get your second. That said, your first one with the COVID vaccine is likely to cause these mild symptoms, but very, very few other symptoms of any significance. For example, Guillain-Barré, we talked about briefly here. some people will get the vaccinations for, you know, the flu or for the chickenpox or something of that nature. And at the end of the day, they may get a Guillain-Barré syndrome. It's a paralysis syndrome, can kill, but it's one in a million, one in a few million. Nobody has so far received Guillain-Barré from these vaccines that we're aware of. And Guillain-Barré patients, those who have had it in the past, were not excluded. There's a lot of people who, you know, you might think were excluded because of their medical problems or their, you know, intolerances of certain medicines. As long as they're not severe allergies that lead to this thing called anaphylaxis, where you literally can't breathe and your heart starts racing and, you know, you can die theoretically. As long as that's not your reaction to other vaccines or to certain medicines, for example, you're probably still in the running here to get this vaccine. There's very few that can't get it. Hmm.
There's just those that won't.
Yeah.
There's those that
like
won't.
Like me.
Won't, and that's exactly it. And it's, you know, and it's, I go back to the numbers. If you look at a chart of all the vaccines ever produced and all the diseases that those vaccines were produced to fight, the ratios between lives saved versus lives lost is right on a magnitude of thousands to hundreds of thousands, mm-hmm, including millions at times.
And, you know, in fairness, I would assume that do all the other vaccines, the mumps, rubella, the traditional ones, measles, there's a certain percentage of people who react to those as well, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's just a more higher allergic
They've just been around for longer, so mm-hmm, we have more data on them. Mm-hmm.
That's right. People are more comfortable with that. And that's, you know, that's the thing. We know about the short-term vaccine risks here. We just don't know absolutely about long-term vaccines. And it basically is a decision of, do you wait or not? If you wait and you get the infection, your risk of dying is, you know, monumentally higher than if you get the vaccine and you don't wait. Is there going to be some magical thing that happens in 5 years or a year or 20 years or to our offspring? No one can tell you for sure, but it's exceptionally unlikely for so many scientific reasons based on the way it's made and how it works, et cetera, that it just probably isn't worth us not sleeping over.
I'm a little confused by that statement you made because I just heard Dr. Anthony Fauci the other day say in an interview that even if you get the vaccine, you could still get COVID and die from it.
Oh, no, of course. I didn't say you couldn't get it. I said on average. So 5% of people with the current vaccines that we have access to, 5% are not going to have the benefit. So remember, in the studies, 5% of people still got COVID. But here's the caveat with it. None of them died. None of them got intubated. That's a huge difference.
So is that saying that there's a protective effect even if you do get
Probably.
It? Is that the idea?
Yeah. It's very likely that there is a
protective effect. Reducing the severity of the disease.
Yeah, and in most cases, although there aren't a lot of reported cases, and there are more and more out there, but in most cases when people have got the natural COVID infection again, and often with a separate strain, for example, or with the same strain, when they've proved that, in almost all cases, with one exception that I recall reading, their infection was less the second time, less intense, less worrisome. It's also thought that people who've had the vaccine and get another, who've had the disease and get a vaccine, they're getting just more bang for the buck, more protection. That's why they're not trying to suggest that people with the history of infection should still get the vaccine. Mm-hmm.
Just about out of time, but what do we know now about how often the vaccine will need to be administered? At one point, some studies were saying maybe it wears off, the antibody effect wears off in 5 or 6 months. What are you reading about that?
So we don't have an answer. They've been tested only since the summer of 2020. So we don't know exactly how long they're going to last. The phase one Moderna trial suggested these neutralizing antibodies that really prevent you from getting the disease, you know, assuming you're not one of the unlucky 5%, persisted for at least 4 months. And the titers declined slightly over time, but seemed to still offer the protection. We don't know. We don't expect that there'll be a booster. Certainly, they don't think within a year. Granted, if these mutations start to become so significant, we will have to recreate that vaccine. But at the end of the day, I don't think that we have enough to say when it will happen. It would not surprise me if we ended up needing booster shots every year, two, three, something of that nature. But it will also depend on how many of us, what percentage get this, because if we do get it to the point of a herd immunity, it will be harder for it to break into our community and cause the kind of devastation that we've seen.
Dr. John Kirk with our COVID catch-up. Dr. Kirk's a physician in the Adventist healthcare system, and he's an OBGYN and seeing patients. And give us your contact info, please.
Well, thank you so much. You can always go to my website, johnhkirkmd.com. I have lots of information there. You can even make an appointment request there as well. Call us at 707-253-1135 at Adventist Health, St. Helena, here in Napa or up in St. Helena for your appointments.
Thanks for your time and expertise today. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you. Blessings,
guys. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.